I read two stories that I'd like to share with you this morning. A U.S. Navy admiral was attending a naval conference that included admirals from the U.S., English, Canadian, Australian, and French navies. At a reception, he found himself standing with a large group of officers that included personnel from most of those countries. Everyone was chatting away in English as they sipped their drinks when a French admiral suddenly complained that, whereas Europeans learn many languages, Americans learn only English. He then demanded, "Why is it that we always have to speak English in these conferences rather than speaking French?" Without hesitating, the American admiral replied, "Maybe it's because the Brits, Canadians, Aussies, and Americans arranged it so you wouldn't have to speak German." Whether that story is true or not, I don't know, but I think it hits home. The second story, and it just so happens to have to do with France again. Robert Whiting, an elderly gentleman of 83, arrived in Paris by plane. How many have ever been to France? When I was there in 1985, it was the most unfriendly place to Americans that I've ever been. He arrived in Paris by plane. At French customs, he took a few minutes to locate his passport in his carry-on. "You have been to France before, monsieur?" the customs officer asked sarcastically. Mr. Whiting admitted that he had been to France previously. "Then you should know enough to have your passport ready." The American said, "Well, the last time I was here, I didn't have to show it." "Impossible. Americans always have to show their passports on arrival in France." The American senior gave the Frenchman a long, hard look. Then he quietly explained, "Well, when I came ashore at Omaha Beach on D-Day in 1944 to help liberate this country, I couldn't find a single Frenchman to show a passport to." When I was there in France, and I was by myself, I separated from the other two guys I was with, was backpacking through Europe, I made it a special point to go to the beaches of Normandy and to the American cemetery there. And it was quite moving. And when I got back on the train to head up to get a boat to go to England, I sat my backpack down next to me on this train. And there was a Frenchman right across from me, an elderly gentleman. And he looked at my backpack. It had USA on it. He said, "Are you American?" I said, "Yes." And he grabbed my hand, and with tears in his eyes, he said, "Thank you, America." I say that because there are people who remember, even in France. Probably a young boy, perhaps, at the time, but he remembers the Americans coming in and liberating their country. A few years ago, I attended, in fact, it was 12 or 13 years ago, I attended the Weld County's Veterans Memorial Program, and I just saw something that I thought was good. In their program, they had something called Military Wisdom. Three things I'd like to read to you from that I thought was kind of humorous. Instructions printed on a U.S. rocket launcher. Aim toward the enemy. This from an infantry journal. If the enemy is in range, so are you. Here's the quote: "Don't draw fire. It irritates the people around you." Your buddies. Thought that was good. I read this once: "Since tomorrow, we will remember those who died in battle so that we might have freedom. It is the veteran, not the preacher, who has given us freedom of religion. It is the veteran, not the reporter, who has given us freedom of the press. It is the veteran, not the poet, who has given us freedom of speech. It is the veteran, not the campus organizer, who has given us the freedom to assemble. It is the veteran, not the lawyer, who has given us the right to a fair trial. It is the veteran, not the politician, who has given to you the right to vote. It is the veteran who serves under the flag." And I encourage you to remember to fly your flag tomorrow as we observe Memorial Day. But as you think of Memorial Day, It has also become a day when all of the dead are remembered. Tomorrow, my brother who lives in Haven, Kansas, will drive to Bueller, Kansas, if he hasn't done already, and he will put flowers on the graves of my mom and my dad. And then on the graves in the same cemetery of my grandfather and my grandmother. And then on the graves of my great-grandfather and my great-grandmother, all of whom I knew. So we remember on that day all of those who have passed before. My dad was an Army veteran. He served in the early 1950s. He had married my mom, and my oldest sister had just been born. He was about to be shipped to Korea when that forgotten war ended. He never did go. But he was willing, and he was ready. But as we think of Memorial Day, think about this. Since it now has become a day when all who have passed are remembered, you too, one day, will be remembered on Memorial Day. So, today you're the subject of Memorial Day. You're the one doing the remembering. One day, you will be the object. Somebody will be remembering you. And everybody wants to be well remembered. How many times do people talk about their legacy and what they want to be known for? Memorial Day originated as Decoration Day. Soon after the war between the states. Soon after that war, both the North and the South went to the graves of those who had died in that war, some 600,000 of them, and they decorated the graves. It provided, as somebody said, a unified national day of remembrance. Think about that. In this country, both North and South fought against each other, but now together we remember. It's a unified national day of remembrance. But here's something I want you to think of. The observance of Memorial Day permits us to, and I'm going to quote somebody here because I thought this really encapsulates the problem about Memorial Day, because this is a problem. It permits us to overlook any defects of character of the war dead. Attributing to one brief moment of ultimate sacrifice the power to wash away all prior moral defects. You ever thought of that? Here's this soldier who lies there at the beaches, or up above the beaches of Normandy, who's a drunkard, cursed, perhaps an atheist, and yet he sacrificed his life. That was the one last full measure of devotion that he gave so that we have the freedoms that we have today. What of that guy? Well, we remember what he did for our country. But were there other things for which he was remembered by other people? If he was a thief, how would his victim remember him? And this is not to put the damper on Memorial Day. That's not my purpose. I'm getting to something here. Because I want to ask you, how will you be remembered? Maybe better I should ask, how would you like to be remembered? And here's where I want you to consider the verse. It's just one verse I'm going to preach from this morning. Proverbs 10:7. Would you turn your Bibles there, please? Proverbs chapter 10 and verse 7. How would you like to be remembered? Because again, one day you will be the object of Memorial Day. How would you like to be remembered? And then, not only how would you like to be, but now reality sets in. How will you be remembered? And how does that fit with how you would like to be? Are you there at Proverbs 10:7? The memory of the just is blessed, but the name of the wicked shall rot. I ask you again, how will you be remembered one day? And I believe this passage does not just apply to how you will be remembered after you die. I believe it also applies for how you are remembered while you live. You meet someone and you say, that's the last time I'm going to meet that person. Or you're in a conversation with another person talking about that person. How are you remembered in that conversation when you're not there? The memory of the just is blessed, but the name of the wicked shall rot. That one sentence in Proverbs 10:7 is a compound sentence. In other words, you have there, it is composed of two sentences. The memory of the just is blessed, but the name of the wicked shall rot. 80 times in the Old Testament and 40 times in Proverbs alone, you will see that the just and the wicked are placed in antithetic parallelism. Something is said about the just, something is said about the wicked. In this chapter alone, look at verse 3. The Lord will not suffer the soul of the righteous to famish, but he casteth away the substance of the wicked. There you go again. You've got both the righteous and the wicked mentioned in the same verse. Then our verse, verse 7, but before that verse, look at verse 6. Blessings are upon the head of the just, but violence covereth the mouth of the wicked. Go to verse 11. The mouth of a righteous man is a well of life, but violence covereth the mouth of the wicked. Verse 16, the labor of the righteous tendeth to life, the fruit of the wicked to sin. Verse 20, the tongue of the just is as choice silver, the heart of the wicked is little worth. Verse 21, the lips of the righteous feed many, but fools die for want of wisdom. Verse 24, the fear of the wicked, it shall come upon him, but the desire of the righteous shall be granted. Verse 25, as the whirlwind passeth, so is the wicked no more, but the righteous is an everlasting foundation. Verse 28, the hope of the righteous shall be gladness, but the expectation of the wicked shall perish. Verse 30, the righteous shall never be removed, but the wicked shall not inhabit the earth. Verse 31, the mouth of the just bringeth forth wisdom, but the froward tongue shall be cut out. There the word wicked is not used, but the froward. Verse 32, the lips of the righteous know what is acceptable, but the mouth of the wicked speaketh frowardness. In this chapter alone, you see each time the just and the wicked compared to each other. So I'm going to go back to verse 7. And in that verse alone, I want us to compare things about each in that one verse. Three things I want us to compare. Number one, I want us to compare each subject. Each subject. There's two subjects. The memory. And then you would think it would say, the memory of the just is blessed, but the memory of the wicked shall rot. But it doesn't say that. It says, the memory of the just is blessed, but the name of the wicked shall rot. So here you've got the word memory in relation to the just. And it's interesting that that word memory is closely related to the idea of recitation, to recite something, even as we could recite the Pledge of Allegiance this morning, something that you remember and you actually recite it. And you can recite why the name of the just is remembered. That's all included in that word memory. But then you go to the other subject, the name. The name of the wicked, whereas memory is related to recitation, name is related to reputation. I quote further, to cut off the name. You ever read that in the Bible where his name was cut off? To cut someone's name off, and I like the way he says this, was equal to liquidating the person himself. When God instructed the Israelites to conquer the nations of Canaan, thou shalt destroy their name from under heaven. God didn't even want to have their name perpetuated. You see, the name of the wicked shall rot. But while the name of the wicked rots, the memory of the just, including his name, is blessed. Where do you fit in there? Which subject are you? So we compare each subject. Secondly, and you're going, wow, this is going to be a short sermon. He's already on point two, and it's a three-point sermon. Well, hang on. We're going to spend some time on point two. I want us to compare each object of the preposition. The preposition of, the memory of the just. Just is the object. But the name of the wicked. Of is the preposition. Wicked is the object of the preposition. I want us to compare the object of each preposition. Just and wicked. Let's look at the just. Now, if I were to ask you if there was one word for which you would like to be remembered, one word, this would be put on your tombstone. That would be your epitaph. This would be it. It would be just one word. What one word would you like it to be? Would it be the word kind, generous, punctual? I've written all these down. Happy, dedicated, faithful, loyal, leader, loving, patient, meek, humble, redeemed. Wouldn't you agree those are all good words? And yet you could be remembered with one of those without being known by some of the others. For example, you may have this written on your tombstone, punctual. But happy would not apply. Or you might have on your tombstone, faithful. But meek isn't there. So you could be one of those without being some of the others. You could even be redeemed without being dedicated. Without being happy. I know some redeemed people. They're redeemed by the blood of the Lamb who you would never know they're happy. But there's one word that encapsulates all of those. Tzaddik. Just. It's the word righteous. It's the Hebrew word tzaddik. You know, if that was on your tombstone, if that's what you were remembered for, do you realize that that would not only, that would communicate every one of those others? Just. And that's the word that is used here in Proverbs 10:7. It's the memory of the just that is blessed. You see, when God was ready to destroy the earth with a flood, he saved one man and his family because he was described as kind, correct? Because he was described as generous, right? Because he was described as happy, faithful. None of those words. How was Noah described? He was a just man. God was ready to destroy Sodom and Gomorrah chapters later. And Abraham went before the Lord and asked if he would destroy those cities if he found 50. And then he went to 45. And then he went to 40. And then he went to 30. And then to 20. And then to 10. Would you destroy those cities if you found this many of what kind of people? Hospitable people? That's what some would have you think. Would you destroy it if you found it for these loving people? Is that the word? No. Abraham said, Lord, would you destroy it? And I'll give you the last number he gave. If you found 10 righteous people. It's the same word you find just in Proverbs 10:7. If you found 10 righteous people, would you destroy? By the way, what was Abraham known for? Would you go with me, please, to that very chapter, Genesis chapter 18. I want you to see what Abraham was known for. How did God describe him? How would you like God to describe you? Genesis 18 and verse 19. God has just asked in verse 17, shall I hide from Abraham the thing which I do? And then in verse 19, for I know him that he will command his children and his household after him, and they shall keep the way of the Lord to do. You see that word justice? That's the word righteousness. It's related to the word just in Proverbs 10:7. He is someone I know will do justice and judgment, that the Lord may bring upon Abraham that which he hath spoken of him. God knew Abraham to be one who does justice. He was a righteous man. And then I go to the last words of King David in 2 Samuel chapter 23 and verse 3, where he says, verse 2, he says, the Spirit of the Lord spake by me, and his word was in my tongue. And here's what he says in verse 3. The God of Israel said, the Rock of Israel spake to me, he that ruleth over men must be. I wonder what a ruler of men must be. A leader, generous, redistributing everybody's wealth, kind, loyal, loving. You go through all those. And what is it that David, by inspiration of the Holy Spirit, said that if a man is going to rule over men, he must be, what do you think the word is? Just. He must be righteous. He must be just. Boy, would things change in our country if every one of our leaders were just? From the president down to the Supreme Court to the Congress, if every one of those men were just? But folks, you know something? That's going to happen. Not in this country. But when the Lord comes and he reigns during the millennium and we reign with him, you know what? He that ruleth over men will be just, will be righteous. This word just is found in the Old Testament 205 times. If you take the words that are related to it, like you have a verb, an adjective, and a noun, if you take all of those and you put those all together, more than 500 times the word just occurs in the Old Testament. But there's one chapter where most of the words just occur. And it's in the chapter we're in this morning, Proverbs chapter 10. And so I looked up the definition from the theological word book of the Old Testament about, let's get the definition of the word just. Here's what it is. The root basically connotes conformity to an ethical or moral standard, not deviating from the standard. Well, then the question arises, what is the standard, or who is the standard? What defines that which is just? What defines that which is righteous? Because if it's the memory of the just that is blessed, I want to know what the standard is, because I don't want to deviate from that standard. They answer that. The standard is God's own will and nature. His characteristics are the ultimate standard of human conduct. And that's what you'll find throughout the Old Testament, that God is the ultimate standard of what is righteous. Folks, what is men's reference points today? Well, it's the Constitution of the United States, a good document, but it is not inspired. And if I am simply doing what is according to that standard, that's good in this land, and I respect the Constitution, but ultimately that Constitution, as we know, was based upon principles you'll find from God's Word. And you say, well, you said that God is the standard. That's right. Because the Bible says in Deuteronomy 32:4, he is the rock. His work is perfect. For all his ways are judgment. A God of truth and without iniquity. Help me out. Just and right is he. He always does what is right. Always. And as he is, so is his word. The psalmist says this in Psalm 119:172, my tongue shall speak of thy word, for all thy commandments are righteousness. Just. Same word. All your commandments are righteousness. I want you to go with me for an illustration to Deuteronomy, where we're going to see a very good illustration of what righteousness is, or what it is to be just. Deuteronomy chapter 25. In this passage of commandments and laws and statutes and judgments, here's one that God gives in Deuteronomy chapter 25 and verse 13. Here's what it says. Thou shalt not have in thy bag diverse weights, a great and a small. Thou shalt not have in thine house diverse measures, a great and a small. Now look up here for just a moment. Why would this be in the Bible? Don't have in your bag diverse weights, two kinds of weights. Don't have in your house two kinds of measures. What is this all about? Well, let's go to the weights to start with. You've seen the scales. It's on the Supreme Court building in the United States. You see the scales, and it speaks of justice. Well, if you have on one side the weight of what is the standard, and you have on the other side that, well, this is Hillary Clinton, so we're going to put a heavy weight here. And now the scale tips toward Hillary Clinton. Is that just? Come on, folks, is that just? Absolutely not. Okay, if you're trying to sell something, and you say, I want a pound of bananas. So on one side, you get your weight that is 1 pound. You put that in a scale. But what you don't know is that the guy who's doing it, is the weight is not really a pound. It's 14 ounces. But it looks like a pound. So he puts the 14-ounce weight over here. It says 1 lb on it. See, well, that's a pound. Scale goes down. He says, you wanted a pound of bananas. Okay, here we go. He starts putting, maybe bananas isn't good because, you know, it's hard to balance that out. But say you're pouring something in there, like some grain. Like, I want a pound of, well, come on, ladies, help me out. What do you need? Oh, now I'm getting all kinds of stuff here. Let's just say beans. Okay, so you're getting a pound of beans because you can get that pretty close. And so the scales go, and now it's balanced. You think you've got a pound. How much did you actually get? 14 ounces. You got ripped off. God says, you shall not have in your bag two weights. Next verse he says, and you shall not have in your house two kind of measures. I mean, you know what I'm talking about there, okay? You've got this measuring cup and you say, this is a cup. But it's only 15/16 of a cup. And you're getting ready to make your malto meal like I did this morning. And so you've got the malto meal and you say, this is a pound. And it's actually, or a cup, and it's actually 15/16 of a cup. You just got ripped off. Now, is that right? Have you been done righteously? No, you've been done wickedly. That is unrighteous. That is unjust. Now you get to verse 15. But thou shalt have a perfect and, what's the word? Just weight. It's the same word you find in Proverbs 10:7. A righteous weight. A perfect and Just measure shalt thou have, that thy days may be lengthened in the land which the Lord thy God giveth thee. For all that do such things and all that do unrighteously are an abomination unto the Lord thy God. So when you have the scales and you've got that one standard, whether it be the pound or whether it be the cup, that's the standard. And if it doesn't balance out, you have been done unrighteously. But folks, let's make some application here. You've got the standard. It's God. And you're trying to match up. You're trying to say, well, I don't need to meet that. Men don't know what's going on in my heart, but to them I look perfectly righteous. And that's how I'm going to influence them. But God knows the heart. And so you appear to be righteous, but when God weighs you and you are in the balances, you are weighed in the balances and you are found wanting, as Belshazzar learned in Daniel chapter 5. God has weighed you in the balances, Belshazzar. You have been found lacking. Now, isn't that true of everybody, though? For all have sinned and come short of the glory of God. All of us have been found to be unrighteous. Folks, true righteousness is not what you try to make men think out of you, but what God already knows you to be. Jesus said this to the Pharisees who were standing there. The Pharisees who were considered the righteous people of day. Luke 16:15. He said this, "Ye are they which justify yourselves before men, but God knoweth your hearts, because that which is highly esteemed among men is an abomination in the sight of God." You are those who justify. You try to make yourself look righteous. You try to make yourself fit on the scale with God as the standard. But God knows your heart. And that which is highly esteemed among men, it's an abomination in the sight of God. You see, a man could be wicked, but made to appear righteous by the last thing he ever does in his life. He lays down his life for a friend, or even for a stranger. You've got this man who's walking down the street, and he's as wicked as can be. He's a thief. He's a liar. He's a cheat. But he sees this little child wandering off into the street, and a car is coming, and he jumps out and saves the child. But he is killed. And how will people remember that man? Oh, he sacrificed his life. And was that a great deed? Yes, it is. Oh, he'll always be remembered for what he did. Yes, and by people he may be, but by God? By God? Does that balance out his wickedness? You see, all of a sudden you're becoming Muslims, if you believe that. One last observation about this word, the just. It is singular. The memory of the just. The word just is singular. In other words, each deed of a righteous man can be remembered or recited individually with that man's name. The just. On the other hand, compare that to the other object of the preposition. Wicked. Wicked is in the plural. The memory of the just man is blessed. But the name of the wicked shall rot. It's plural. Isn't it interesting that you can be a righteous man and you can be considered alone as one individual in God's mind? But when you're wicked, you're in a whole class of people. You include yourself with them. It's a class of persons who are evil with a focus on the guilt of violating a standard. I quote from the Dictionary of Biblical Languages with Semantic Domains. The related word wickedness denotes the kind of life that is opposite to God's character. You see, I read in Psalm 45, verse 7, "Thou lovest righteousness and hatest wickedness." It's in the plural because what do wicked people tend to do? They tend to congregate. They tend to go around in crowds. They tend to be with each other. It's kind of interesting that gangs don't go off by themselves. That's why they're called gangs. They practice their wickedness together. And you'll find that it's very rare that a man who is wicked goes off by himself. There are some, Timothy McVeigh and so forth, they go off by themselves, but yet they're in a group of people. And so I want you to compare not only the subject, but the objects of the preposition. Then lastly, I want you to compare each verb. What's the verb for the just? The memory of the just is? Yeah, it's blessed. What's the verb for the wicked? The name of the wicked shall rot. Let's compare each verb. Let's look at the word blessed. The word blessed, the root of that word, is related to the word knee. Now you can touch your knee. That's it. It's related to your knee. Why would the word blessed be related to the word knee? The possible association is somebody who kneels down to receive a blessing from somebody who's greater. Well, who's greater than all men? God himself. In general, the blessing is transmitted from the greater to the lesser. Thus, the blessing here is not so much from other people as it is from God. Folks, listen. The memory of the just is blessed. I kneel before God, and he blesses me. That's the memory of the just. And this memory carries on into eternity. Psalm 112, verse 6, "The righteous shall be in everlasting remembrance." Folks, think about that. The righteous shall be in everlasting remembrance because the memory of the just is blessed. But let's look at the other verb. The name of the wicked shall rot. With time, the name of the wicked decays because their name is as corrupt as their character. Few people today name their daughters Jezebel. I've never met one. Why? Because her name has rotted. I know some Jezebels, but the name is rotted. Few people name their daughters Athaliah. Few people name their sons Cain or Judas. You ever met a guy by the name of, how about a guy by the name of Nero? Why? Because the name has rotted. Or Hitler. Since they run in crowds, their name decays with all the other wicked. When we first moved to Colorado in 1995, there was a famous congresswoman from the Boulder, Denver area who was retiring. Now, being from that area, you kind of know what kind of person this was. And she was famous to everybody else. She was a wicked woman. So the Greeley Tribune asked readers to comment on how she would be remembered. Well, I just can't keep my mouth shut, so I wrote something in there. I just put one verse. I just wrote it out and I sent it to the Tribune. Guess what verse I chose? Proverbs 10:7. "The memory of the just is blessed, but the name of the wicked shall rot." Oh boy, did that get some reactions. Isn't it kind of interesting? Because I didn't even say whether she was the righteous or the wicked. They knew where to place her. And the ironic thing is I don't remember what her name was. Why? Because her name shall? It rots. The name of the wicked shall rot. Psalm 9:6 puts it this way, "Their memorial is perished with them." Psalm 34:15 to 16, "The eyes of the Lord are upon the righteous, and his ears are open unto their cry. But the face of the Lord is against them that do evil, to cut off the remembrance of them from the earth. Folks, the fact that their name rots is not accidental. It's providential that their name rots. And today you may remember them, but their name rots. One last exercise I'd like you to do. That doesn't mean this is the last time you're turning to another scripture, but I want you to go to the book of 2 Chronicles. Most of you, some of you have been through this book this month because you're doing a Bible reading with the rest of us. Maybe you notice this. I've noticed this every time I go through the book of Chronicles. Let's start with 2 Chronicles chapter 14. Let's compare the kings of Judah. Let's compare the burial of the good kings of Judah with the bad kings of Judah. Let's compare the burial of righteous kings versus the wicked kings. Let's see if indeed the memorial or the memory of the just is blessed and the name of the wicked shall rot. Let's just go ahead and see if there's any examples in the book of 2 Chronicles. Let's start with 2 Chronicles chapter 14. And we're looking at the king by the name of Asa. And in 14:2 it says, "And Asa did that which was good and right in the eyes of the Lord his God." Let's see how he's buried in chapter 16 and verse 14. "And they buried him in his own sepulchre, in his own sepulchres which he had made for himself in the city of David, and laid him in the bed which was filled with sweet odors and divers kinds of spices prepared by the apothecary's art, and they made a very great burning for him." Now, let's move on to a king by the name of Jehoram and compare the burial. Chapter 21 and verse 6. He is also a king of Judah. He's a descendant of King Asa. And it says this in chapter 21 and verse 6, "And he walked in the way of the kings of Israel, like as did the house of Ahab, for he had the daughter of Ahab to wife, and he wrought that which was evil in the eyes of the Lord." Let's see how this man is buried in verse 20. 32 years old was he when he began to reign, and he reigned in Jerusalem 8 years and departed without being desired. Albeit they did bury him in the city of David, but not in the sepulchers of the kings. That's just one example. I could give you the example of Ahaz, of Hezekiah, of Josiah. The wicked, their name shall rot. Not to mention a wicked queen by the name of Jezebel. What was her end? How did she die? Throw her down. Well, that's a good way to die, to fall. And not only that, but then when she fell and she hit the ground, the horses trampled upon her. And her blood spattered everywhere. And not only that, but when they went to try to find her, they couldn't find her because the dogs ate her. Although they did find a hand. You don't believe me? It's 2 Kings 9, 33 to 37. You need not turn there, but this illustrates the name of the wicked shall rot. Last summer, I stood in front of Chairman Mao. I stood in front of Chairman Mao's tomb in China with my interpreter, near Tiananmen Square in Beijing. And there's thousands of people in Tiananmen Square. I and my interpreter are the only ones standing before the tomb of Mao. And I turned to my interpreter and I said, "Why aren't there more people here? I thought there'd be lines of people to come to this tomb." He says, "We hate him." I said, "What? You've got this huge monument to him, and it's right there by the Congress and where all the political people are?" He says, "You mean the Christians hate him?" He says, "Oh, no. Everybody in China hates him. This is a show." You see, the name of the wicked, a man who murdered 40 to 70 million of his own people, what do you think his name is today? It is rotting with his body. Malachi chapter 3, the last chapter of the Old Testament. Malachi chapter 3, verse 14. See if this fits any of you. Malachi 3, 14. Ye have said, it is vain to serve God. Oh, look up here. Anybody thinking that way? What's? It is vain to serve God. It is so vain. The righteous never get ahead. It's always the wicked who get ahead. That's what these people are saying. Ye have said it is vain to serve God. And what profit is it that we have kept his ordinance and that we have walked mournfully before the Lord of hosts? And now we call the proud happy. Yea, they that work wickedness are set up. Yea, they that tempt God are even delivered. It's the wicked who are succeeding. They're the ones prospering. Hang on. Verse 16, then they that feared the Lord spake often one to another, and the Lord hearkened and heard it, and a book of remembrance was written before him for them that feared the Lord and that thought upon his name, and they shall be mine, saith the Lord of hosts, in that day when I make up my jewels, and I will spare them as a man spareth his own son that serveth him. Then ye shall return and discern between the righteous and the wicked, between him that serveth God and him that serveth not. One day, even though the wicked seems to prosper, one day you're going to see that it does profit to serve God. You're going to see that it is profitable to be a righteous man when you see the end of the wicked. Now it doesn't seem that way. But one day, this Memorial Day, let's remember those who gave their lives for our freedom, but also consider how you're going to be remembered. Will your name rot? Or will your memory be just? Will your name rot? That's what happens to all who die in their sins. Remember Psalm 34, 16, the face of the Lord is against them that do evil, to cut off the remembrance of them from the earth. Or will your memory be blessed? That applies only to the just. But you say there is none righteous. No, not one. And you would be right. But I've got another verse for you. For he, that is God, hath made him, that is Jesus Christ, to be sin for us, that we might be made the righteousness of God in him. If you know Jesus Christ as your Savior this morning, you stand before God righteous. And the memory of the just is blessed. Your status can be changed immediately this morning, even as that of one of the thieves that was crucified when he said to Jesus, Lord, remember me when thou comest into thy kingdom. And Jesus' way of saying, I will remember you, is this. Today, thou shalt be with me in paradise. That could be you as well.